The Brothers Wisp.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers Wisp. Let's take a ride.
Hey, everybody. This is Greg with the Brothers Wisp, number 117. So today, it is, this is reminiscent of old times. It's just me and Mikey rapping about the things.
Yeah, it's been a while since it was just the two of us.
I know. Have you missed me?
Keep getting all these strangers. A little bit.
All these randos that keep joining our party. It's ridiculous. Gonna keep these scrubs out of here. All right, so let's get the quick stuff out of the way. So, no new patrons this little go around, which always makes me a little bit sad, but not too sad. So that's folks that go to patreon.com/brotherswisp. You throw us a couple of bones, you get access to our private only Slack. Our patron only Slack. So we also have a couple of sponsors. So we are sponsored by Sonar.software. It's a scalable, intuitive, and comprehensive ISP billing an operational support system. It's the kind of thing a Wisp has on the back end that automates their billing and takes care of stuff like that, you know, their queuing and things like that. So if you want to visit those guys, check them out at sonar.software. We also have Cambium, and I have to kind of look over to the side for my notes. It is a special value meal deal they've got. It's supersized. So you get a $6,000 value, but it's only a couple grand. You get 6 months of Wisp.net automation and billing, as well as RF Elements twist horns, and you get some time with one-on-one EPMP engineer. So reach out to them via the link in the doodly-doo over down in the show notes. Either way, we've got them there for you. So, Mikey, first thing on the list, it says that Zone sucks. Why would you say that? And that's spelled Z-H-O-N-E.
Yeah, now I'll preface this by, I don't know what other platforms I would go with, but Zone is very trying. Zone is a company that, much like Calyx, they make a variety of DSL and GPON-based infrastructure. They are also like Calyx in that there are a combination of different acquisitions over the years. And, you know, like most of these platforms, you know, you can, you know, SSH into the device itself. You can go into the web interface on the device itself, or they have like a VM you can spin up with this other, you know, web-based software management for your whole network. And I know there are lots of moving pieces in GPON. And there's only so much that they can do without losing the functionality. But it's like you and I, no, I guess we both speak English. It'd be like me and someone from Zimbabwe are, you know, building the same platform, like just different parts of it. Like in the CLI, there's different syntax styles for different things. Sometimes it's show some command. Other times it's some command and then show. There's just no consistency at all.
So Zone, I reckon a lot of folks have probably heard of them. Are they, I mean, is this just a Chinese manufacturer of equipment, or who makes this stuff?
Well, so Zone is actually based out of Florida.
All right, so they're a U.S. company, then.
Yeah, and then a few years ago, they were purchased by, merged with, something like that, a company called Dasan. And I forget their origins. I think it's somewhere on the Asian continent.
I was gonna say, these guys get around then, because even Ollie over in Norway, isn't he using this Zone stuff a lot?
Yeah. I guess Dasan is from South Korea, and so they merged or were purchased by some South Koreans, and it's very trying, and like it's not just the fact that the software sucks. And like, I've talked to multiple people. They're like, yeah, we know it's not very consistent. And like, you know, and it's like some, like, there's a different team that makes the web interface, and so they have a different idea of how things should be organized. So if you know the CLI like the back of your hand, it is almost only 20% of that is useful in using the web interface, because it's all in a different spot, grouped differently. But it extends into the organization itself. You know, knowing that it was important for me to get this ramped up quickly, you know, I bought, you know, 10 hours or 20 hours, I forget how much, of, you know, consulting time from our distributor. But as it turns out, he doesn't really know much about the platform. I mean, knew more than I did at the beginning, but he's not an expert. So every time I have him working on something, it's always, you know, in a shared, you know, screen share with someone at Zone. And the first time, you know, we spent 2 or 3 hours getting stuff set up, you know, answering questions, configuring this. Something didn't work quite right. So, you know, I got ADD'd off for a while, and I came back and had somebody else. We still spent 2 hours to fix 2 things. I mean, I should have been 20 minutes at most. We spent 2 hours because he's like, well, I don't know where this is. So he's hunting around the you know, interface, trying to find where things are.
So was this a greenfield install for you guys, like brand new?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Well, what led you to choose Zone over, say, like the Ubiquiti GPON stuff, or maybe like Calyx, like you talked about, or
sure. Vice versa? And so from what I understand of Ubiquiti, it is much simpler to use because it's not coming from the carrier background. You know, you can't do sudo wired. I don't think there's any voice built in. There's no video components. None of those things are there. It's just data in, data out. But it's not NEBS compliant. And I need NEBS compliant because I'm putting it into Frontier COs.
Gotcha.
So
what about the Calyx kit? What was the deal breaker there?
The deal breaker with Calyx was that I could purchase all of the Zone everything for the whole project. The management software, the chassis, the line cards, the support, everything for the cost of one Calyx chassis and line card.
Gotcha. So you basically trade the... I'm assuming that with the Calyx price tag also comes maybe a little bit better support or better software or something like that. So you're kind of trading one thing for the other.
You would hope so.
Yeah.
You would. However, our DSL platform that we've had, I mean, I say we, I just walked in a couple of years ago, but you know, we've had since 2004 is from a company called Occam. Calyx bought Occam several years ago. And, you know, they've kind of been ignoring software updates on the Occam platform for a number of years. So there's all kinds of bugs that they're just not going to fix. So when we were putting in VDSL in a few areas that didn't previously have it, I was like, well, I don't want to continue with these SNMP bugs or, you know, this bug or that bug. So I'll buy off of their, you know, E7 platform, which is their, you know, latest, you know, supported platform. And I think we're behind like one, like OS family, like latest version within that family. But, you know, they, you know, did like a, oh, I'm trying to think of like, you know, Windows 7, Windows 10 type thing. You know, I have the latest Windows 7 on it. Not sure if I can switch to the 10. And it has different peculiarities, but still very complicated. And I don't know as if it may be more consistent, but it's not, there's, there's no easy button. And so it took us a long time to get the VDSL up and working. And we already had a VDSL deployment with another one of their product lines. We already worked with their support. You know, their support leaves some, you know, much to be desired as well. One of my guys was working on a support ticket with them on something. And, you know, he blamed the profile configuration I had. You know, that's what was wrong. I'm like, well, it's literally a copy and paste out of your, you know, applications guide. If, you know, he's like, nope, there's no way we would ever have these things set as default. Okay, well, please suggest changes. Like 4 or 5 days later. Oh, yeah, I guess that is correct. So it must be something else that's wrong. Like, it, you know, we're paying $4,000 or $5,000 a year for that kind of support. So it's like, so I don't know, Calyx would really be much better. You know, both platforms could stand to gain. You know, I understand that, you know, much like MikroTik, you know, it can do so many things, and you can configure those things so many ways to do different things based upon what your needs are. But MikroTik often, you know, they have simple and advanced mode in Winbox, where it's like, you know, I mean, Tom may say that some of the things belong on one and not the other, but there's at least the concept of, let's try to make this a little easier. These guys have seemingly made no attempt at making an easy button. So I still don't have a functional zone platform. They were in it the other day, Friday, working on it. Support guy spent five and a half hours to figure out that needed to change it from NAT to NATP or, you know, whatever, NAT or NAPT maybe, to do many internal IPs to one external. Took 5.5 hours to figure out that that was wrong. But he only changed it on the modem itself, or the ONT. He didn't change it on the management platform. She's like, okay, well, change this. So I went and did it. And with GPON, for those that don't know, GPON, you do configuration on the ONTs or the modems or the radios, all depending on what you're used to. But you configure a lot of it, by far the most of it, almost everything, on your OLT, which is also your DSLAM or your access point. You specify a profile for a given model and how each port on the router is going to be bridged or NATed or routed, and all the speed profiles and all this stuff is on that head end unit. And so I edited what should have been wrong on the OLT side, and pushed that config to a new modem. And then the existing modem that was working no longer worked. Like I didn't push a config to it. It should be exactly what it was before. Okay, so let's roll the change back. Nope, still doesn't work. I'm like, I changed from 1 to 2, didn't work. 2 to 1, still doesn't work. Yeah. Like, it's like, what? And that guy spent 5.5 hours, and it doesn't work.
I've seen you and Ollie commiserating a lot in the Zone channel on the Slack. Have you guys? Is he kind of confirming some of the weirdness you're finding, or? Like, what are you guys talking about in there? Just curious.
You know, there is a Venn diagram of our problems. You know, he's got problems that I haven't seen. I've got problems that he hasn't seen. And there's a few in the middle that we're both frustrated by. Now, I'll give him, you know, I've been doing this for a couple months and extremely part-time at that. Ollie's been doing this for years.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's quite possible that he just knows his way through the parts that I'm having a problem with.
How many subs do you guys have on the Zone kit right now?
None, because it doesn't work.
Ugh, see. That's probably a problem. Sometimes you just got to do a thing. They say every journey starts with the first step, Mike. So you just need to throw it out there and start loading up customers, and you'll figure it out real quick.
Well, that's the problem, is that I had it working in the lab. I moved it to the CO, and then a device that was in the lab, I just factory reset it, and then push the new configuration down, and it didn't work. So it's like, and now like these people, like, you can't get internet service through it. So I can't just be like, it works good enough. No, it the internet part of it doesn't work.
That's kind of important to do. Yeah, I get it.
and that's extremely frustrating. As we've talked about, last month I had, just 1 month ago, I had a heart attack. Actually had my operation 1 month ago today. So I was kind of down for about 2 weeks week and a half, 2 weeks. After that, I spent 1 week in a Zone virtual training. It would have been on site, but because of COVID, no one's doing on site training. So very sparingly. So, we did it all over, GoToWebinar or something like that. We paid a lot of money for the three of us to attend. It was dreadful. It was terrible. So we were there 5 days. We were there between, let's just say, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. 5 days. I don't know as if we really got more than 2 to 3 days of actual content out of this. And so it's just more of that, like, okay, well, it's because I don't know what I'm doing. Well, no, because the support guy spent 2 hours trying to get something to work. And then let's go get some training. And then the training is a disaster. I don't fault the guy too much because it was his first time he ever done a virtual lab. And so, like, he wasn't even at the lab. He had to call other people and, what's this plugged into? What's that plugged into? So there was like then, so he had like some sort of Cisco router that he had, done serial consoles off of into each of the OLTs for each of us to, have access to the raw serial console and then, build our configs from there. And then off of each one, each OLT was a variety of ONTs. Only he didn't remember which one was plugged in where. So you had to figure it out. Which is fine as a learning exercise, assuming your instructor knows what it's supposed to be. And you're not trying to troubleshoot, do you have the right one? and then each of us had a Raspberry Pi that, had two connections in. So that way, you could VNC into the Raspberry Pi to then do, experience being plugged in behind the ONT, it's your internet service. I didn't have a Raspberry Pi. Like, I can't get it, I can't reach it, I can't ping it. And he's like, this isn't working. He's like, I think I took yours for something else, so you just have to wait till tomorrow. Okay, so I couldn't do any of those activities.
Yeah.
And then the next day, he's like, okay, you now have this one. And I connect into it, and I'm like, I can't get it to work. And this is something I haven't done before, or done much. So I'm like doubting that I configured all my stuff correctly, despite the fact that, I'm following a guided tutorial. And then I got looking. I was like, okay, let's start investigating it on my own. Sure enough, the MAC address on the Raspberry Pi that I'm using does not match the MAC address learned on the ONT. Okay, so I have a different Raspberry Pi. Which one is the one that I'm supposed to have? So I'm like going into everybody's ONTs trying to figure out, check the bridging tables, who has this never could figure out which one was supposed to be mine. So I'm like, okay, well, I one day later, I still can't participate in the lab. it was just a
comedy crap of show. Yeah.
It was just like, you know, so it's like, okay, so I'm down 2 weeks because of the heart attack. Now I'm down another week because of this training. I feel as though I didn't really gain anything out of the training. And so now I'm 3 weeks back and trying to get this stuff to work. You know.
Can't win for losing.
It's bad. You have to, you know, it's bad when the drops are complete to the residents. Well, that's the residents, you know, to the business, to the customer prem. And I can't give them service.
You just have to put out some microticks and call it a day. No, I did some training the other day. Like, I mean, I've done a lot of training so far at Red Hat, but I say the other day, it was a little way back. But I did some Ansible Advanced stuff. So Red Hat's got some amazing training stuff, like in their library there. And I also, so I did the Advanced Ansible training, and then I went back and did the I skimmed through the beginner stuff, and I think I went through it in like a day, and then I had scheduled like a in live classroom version of the advanced thing. And so once I got into that, it was really painful. It seemed like, I guess, the advanced class that I'd already taken covered most of the stuff, but there were little tidbits, right? You know, anytime you're listening to like a live instructor, there's stuff you can learn, right? Even if you've already gone over it. So I was trying to pick up that stuff, but you know, you could tell that this was new, that they were used to teaching them in person. And we were basically going at the speed of sort of the slowest 10% of the class. And so it was just, man, it was just painful all the way around. And I got so anxious by the end of the week that I was like, man, I can hardly stand to be in this thing anymore. But I think, you know, everybody's going through learning pains, I guess, growing pains associated with this stuff. And I'm assuming everybody will have it ironed out pretty soon once you do a few of these. Because the Red Hat folks, man, they are doing trainings nonstop. Like every week those trainers are going. So I'm sure these guys have really honed it at this point. But man, I feel for all those guys trying to, you know, flip the worlds upside down on it. I mean, it's you know, it's like asking the teachers right now how they're gonna pivot to online learning. And I was having a conversation with my kid today. He's been real salty about stuff lately. I don't think he's been spending enough time with other human beings. We're gonna like force him out of his room a little bit more. But he was talking about how it was ridiculous that they were still going to use Schoology for like the online learning. He's like, they had 3 whole months. Why couldn't they find something else? I was like, dude, 3 months? Are you kidding me? For the entire state to pivot to a brand new system and to vet all of the various systems. I was like, dude, that is like, there's a titanic monumental ask. It's like, you basically asked them to build a rocket ship and fly to the moon in 3 months. There's no way. And it's the government. It's the government, no less, that's going to do this. So I definitely feel for all of those people right now. Everybody trying to pivot as far as like that stuff goes, you know.
Oh sure, on the zone training, it's like, you know, because because it's the first one that they've done, you know, online only, you know, trying to do the in person one remotely.
Oh.
You know, because it's that fresh, I'm not irate. Right. Like, if I paid, you know, $500 a day per person for this, and you know, they had done this many times and it still sucked, I'd be like, okay, I need at least half my money back, because we didn't even finish learning the web management platform. Because he couldn't figure out how to do some things.
So what did they end up doing? Did they give you like an IOU on it or something? Or
no, it's like, oh, here's a certificate of completion.
Okay, rock and roll.
And so I have all the screen recordings of all of it, and there is some value to that. And I have, like, you know, the paperwork we use to set things up, and there is some value to that, but I do not feel as though we got our money at all.
Sounds like. Sounds tough, man. Sounds tough all the way around.
And, like, you know, now being in a position where it's like, and I need this to work right now.
Gotcha. Well, what's your, what are the steps you guys are taking to resolve it?
Well, so actually, I'm hoping to, I didn't see that he had responded until I was getting ready to do the podcast. I was going to see if I could get Ollie this weekend to remote in and be like, okay, what can you figure out? What can you fix? Because I'm tired of the manufacturer and the people that we bought it from. And, like, you know, somebody else had chimed in that I had, you know, looked at buying it from. You know, said, you know, if you bought it from us, we could help. And I didn't buy it from them
because
they were more expensive by a non-insignificant amount.
That almost sounds like I told you so.
but the thing is, though, is that's like, yes, I'm disappointed in my distributor, but the bulk of my frustration is with the manufacturer. It's the people that they have can't figure their own stuff out. So who are you going to get me? Like, it's the same pool of people at the manufacturer. Like, I doubt distributor A has all the good, you know, all the good people, and distributor B has all the dummies. Like, you know, in terms of, you know, manufacturers, reps, and support contacts, and things like, you know, trainers, you know.
Well, I mean, some manufacturers lean on their network of folks, whether it's distributors or consultants, to really do the bulk of that for them. Right. And maybe is Zone one of those products that sort of, you know, I mean, like MikroTik, right? They're not there to hold your hand or take your phone calls and fix your problem. That's what they, you know, they let their supply chain or rather their downstream chain, all that stuff take care of. So is that Zone? Are they sort of the same or?
Well, so it's not the same. There could be some things that are similar, but like the training that we got was from Zone.
Straight,
you know, MikroTik doesn't do their own training. You know, I'd have to go to, you know, you or Tomas or whoever else to get trained. And if I were to come to any of you, you know, consultants for, you know, or distributors for help on something, you know, you're not just going to deflect to a, you know, go to webinar with MikroTik. And MikroTik takes the lead, you know. You're good. You know, you would do your work, or I wouldn't pay you for it.
Hmm.
You know, you aren't just deflecting to MikroTik. So there's some similarities, but I mean,
I get you.
Like you know that sort of support structure just doesn't seem to exist at MikroTik for it to be a perfect comparison.
Gotcha. Well, have you sullied their name enough yet? Are you ready to move on?
I mean, I'm sure I could go for at least another hour and a half. But that's probably not good value for money for our people.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I mean, if you want to go, you know, if you want to know more, go to patreon.com/brotherswisp, join our Slack, and pop into the Zone channel.
It's basically just it's you and Ollie, like, trading jabs in there. So,
yeah.
For sure. Or if you have any advice for Mike, you know, where he could dig a hole and bury the Zone equipment he has, let him know.
If you are a Zone expert, reach out to me as soon as possible, because like I'm at the point where it's like I'll pay somebody. I was trying to pay somebody, but I can't get somebody competent to do it.
I hear you, man. That's the tough thing.
No, not even the guy that made it, or with the company.
All right. Well, I met some folks a little while back. So Red Hat does this thing apparently where they partner with colleges and do this. They do like stuff like these programs where they can kind of like help these guys out with various things or whatever. You know, I think it's much the same way that a lot of the major manufacturers do, like Cisco and stuff like that. Anyway, I digress. The initial contact we have with this college is through their security people. And so one of the security guys actually reached out to me and he's like, hey, I'm doing this competition. It's called like Lockdown, and it's put on by like the College of Buffalo or something like that. And it sounded really interesting. He said So it's a small team of guys. I think it's only like a handful of people like on your team. And he's in charge of the network element. So he's got like the router firewall. It's going to be like a pfSense device. And I guess maybe there's like a switch or something else inside that he has to like manage or whatever. But here's the premise. They hand you like, or they read you the rules out loud. So there's a blue team and a red team. You're the blue team. You've got the hardware. And the red team are trying to attack you. So there you have like hacking tools. And the blue team, they give you the prompt that's got like all the usernames, passwords for your equipment, and tells you what your servers are. And then you've got 30 seconds. And then after that 30 seconds, the red team starts attacking you. And they're monitoring all of your services that you're running inside. And it's going to be different services every time they do the event. So it could be probably like a web server, FTP, email server, you know, just like stuff like that that's internet accessible that you have, you know, maybe DNS server. And it's a mixture of like Linux and Windows machines inside. And you never know what you're going to end up, you know, like getting or whatever. Save for the firewall. In this instance, they know it's going to be like a pfSense device, which I think is pretty clever because that's, you know, pfSense is free, right? But there's like a paid version or something like that, I guess. So, or maybe like a premium version. So anyway, you can at least grab that stuff and test. Even if you're like a broke college kid that doesn't like have things or money, you know, you can actually get in there. So this kid basically said, the competition runs, they start the clock. And you've got 3 hours, and you try and keep your services up for as long as possible. And the team that can keep their services online for the longest length of time wins. And I thought that was such a fun challenge. Like, but then I was also thinking about it on the other side of the coin. Like, if I was on the red team, I wouldn't know what the hell to do. Like, I've never actually tried to like exploit somebody's network or do anything like that. I asked him, I was like, well, can you just volumetric DDoS somebody? And he goes, no, that's like the one thing they won't let you do. I was like, because that sounds like pretty easy way to just knock you offline for the whole time. So, but aside from that, and it's, as soon as he started like talking to me, because he wanted some advice or whatever, and I don't know that I'm necessarily the guy to give the advice, I just immediately knew the things I would try and do. But yeah, so right off the bat, you've got some services inside, you know, there's a team of hackers that are about to, and they only have, a loose bit of information. They don't necessarily know what all of your IP addresses are, all of your devices and stuff like that. So there has to be some discovery on their side as well. So what would you do? What do you think the first thing you would do with any tool that you had available? So here's the trick. You can't use any private resources. So anything you use has to be like publicly available on the internet, right? So you can't like hit like a private Git repo and pull something down or whatever. And to think about it too, you don't have that much time. Like 30 seconds isn't enough time to go out and like install an IDS, you know, and then tie that into your firewall. You know, you don't have time for that stuff. So what do you reckon is kind of, because I thought this was just an interesting thought exercise. Given the tools in front of you, you know, in 30 seconds, I'm going to start attacking you. Let's ignore pfSense. It's whatever kind of device you want it to be. That your border router. What are the things you're gonna do immediately to protect yourself?
I've never been a poster child for good network security.
Neither have I. Neither have I. See, that's the fun part of the exercise. It's like, what would you guess?
Well, see, and so, like, I think the first thing that I wouldn't do, is, like, that people would probably think is, you know, let's start with, you know, let's do a, you know, I know that these are the ports that I want to work, you know, 80443, whatever. You know, let's just do and allow those and drop all else. But, like, they don't even know what you have to start with. And then, you know, that's not doing anything for the actual application security. So, I guess maybe I would do that, you know. You know, allow these, block all else, just to you know, limit the attack surface, but then you're also kind of, you know, narrowing down what it is that you want them to attack. Be like, oh, well, this is the only port that's open, so that must be the one that I need to, you know, throw into end map and start seeing, you know, what version it is or whatever.
And, right, right.
And start looking for, oh, God, yeah, it, just shut down space H space now.
Just start everything up. Shut it off. Put your hands up and walk away.
Get in now.
Yeah, I was thinking the very first thing I would do is unplug the internet connection, right? All of your services go down, but it's who can keep them up the longest. So even if you only, like, if I have them down, say, for 5 to 7 minutes, something like that, maybe less than 10 minutes, then that gives me enough time to, I think, harden stuff before they really start poking at it. So I was thinking that would be a good one. But the first thing that popped into my head is if I had a microtick, I've got that script somewhere on my blog that it looks for people doing port scans. And as soon as they do a port scan, it adds that address to an address list. And from there, you could do whatever you want with it. So you could tar pit their connection, which is going to hang all of their tools and every single port will look open and they won't know which ones to hit. Or you could just straight, I was thinking the best thing to do would just be straight block them, right? Just add them to that address list and don't let them try and do anything at all. So that would, I think, really hinder their progress in trying to mess with you. Because the first thing they're going to do is a port scan. As soon as it comes up, they're going to start port scanning you. It's going to catch that port scan and it will block them. That's not to say they're not going to allow, it's right, because it's like you don't know what they're going to do on the quote-unquote internet connection. So they could allow them to spoof IP addresses, I guess. And if they could spoof IPs, then they could just, you know, change ports and, you know, pivot their tactics or something like that.
And I guess you could... so if I had a microtick, yeah, and not a pfSense, because I just don't know enough about
pfSense. Yeah, I don't know anything about them, to be honest with you.
Set up a, you know, port scan script, you know, because the objective isn't, yeah, it's not the ultimate insecurity. It's just how can you keep them away the longest?
Yeah, just
and so
jam these guys out for as long as possible.
Port scan, dump it into a tar pit.
So everything would look open, you know, because that's what tar pit does, right? It hangs your TCP session open and just never closes it until you do. So all of your scanning tools. I remember we were doing PCI compliance, or some guy was doing PCI compliance port scan against a router I'd configured for this one office network, I think. I can't remember. Anyway, they failed the scan because it showed 65,000 open ports, and it took the scanners 3 days to get the scan to complete because I had tar pit on. I just changed it to drop, the drop rule instead of tar pit, and then they successfully passed their scan when absolutely nothing showed up, right? So that was a good one. But I was also thinking, you know, what happens if they get clever and realize that if you do a port scan, you're getting blocked, and they can spoof IPs and just come from something else? Maybe it would be a good idea to keep some kind of a honeypot open, but then again, in 30 seconds, you don't have time to do that, right? But I guess if you're buying yourself some time while you're doing the hardening, you're doing this and that, maybe you could... I don't think they have a virtualized environment either, so you can't just spin up another VM. So I guess that's not really a usable solution. I don't know. That's really interesting. Maybe you could, depending on the services, you could do... because I know, like, for web, there's, like, those software IDSs you can install in there, like with the OWASP rule sets and stuff. I can't remember what those things are called right off the top of my head, but you could probably start trying to harden your stuff like that. It seems like the guy running the firewall probably has the most control. You know, I was thinking from the red team's perspective, it would be really fun is if you thought they were doing that, spoof the IP address of the monitoring server. That way they add the monitoring server to their block list and then everything will just be down. I was thinking that would be pretty fun.
Yeah?
Yeah, I honestly have never
used... Yeah, because even if you're up, they don't see it.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, you technically completed the objective there. So that would be, I don't know, that would be kind of a fun little exercise, I thought. I had never had the opportunity to look at something from this perspective presented. So I know, like, in Cisco Routers too, they have kind of a poor man's IPS. I wouldn't even call it that. They have this thing called the shun command. And it's basically the same thing as that script. So it looks for port scans on interfaces you designate. And if it sees them, it'll just block them. It'll add them to the shun list and block them for however long you configure. So it kind of accomplishes the same thing-ish in a way. So I know you can do that on Cisco. You can do that on MikroTik. I'm assuming everybody's got some flavor of that to some degree or another. So I'm sure the PF SenseBox does too.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty well known for its firewall capabilities. I just don't know anything about it.
Yeah. And then, like, I know in MikroTik too, I think I've got some other rules where, you know, you're looking for, like, not volumetric DDoS stuff, but like SYN floods and stuff. You know what I mean? Because that's probably stuff they're going to do. Just the little easy peasy stuff to knock your services offline. Just try and overload whatever little web server is. It's probably stuff like that. I'd be curious about the folks listening if they've ever participated in something like that, or would they be interested in participating in something like that? Not to say we would do something wide scale, but it does sound... This sounds like a fun little experiment. I'm not suggesting somebody unsolicited starts attempting it against our networks, but if we set up a little lab environment, I think it actually could be kind of a fun exercise. I think I would end up learning a lot in the process.
Sure. Yeah. I wonder, if you'd be able to, at one of the conferences, get a room for a day. Off to the side and, throw up, your lab environment and say, okay, let's have people come over and try it.
Yeah.
Just, see what you do.
Cause I think it's, to me, I'm very interested in being the blue team cause I've always been part of the blue team. Right. But, it would be interested to learn how the guys on the red team do it. Cause I've never seen that. I don't know what tool sets they necessarily use, for doing that stuff. So. I'm sure you could Google for it, but it would be, I don't know, it'd be interesting to see people to do it live in action.
Sure.
All right. So let's move on. I did a little bit of VoIP stuff this week, and Mikey, you do a lot of VoIP stuff every week. So I thought this might be kind of interesting to you. I had this this challenge I set for myself. So in that thing I talked about before where I set up that monitoring system where it would if a site went down, it would like go and do that automatic troubleshooting. I thought of another thing I would wanted it to do, and I wanted it to connect to my 3CX server and put my support line like on a call handler first, right? So if I see a whole site down, I want it to go to my phone system and put an automated message in there that says, "Hey, we realize your entire property is having issues. You know, we're trying to repair it as quick as possible. At this time, we're not really sure what the ETA is on repair. If it's an issue unrelated to this, please," just some bullshit message that would basically stem the tide of everybody calling saying, "Hey, my internet's down." If they get that message, they'll be like, "Oh, okay, well, that sucks," and I'll hang up. So I think that could actually be really beneficial for a lot of guys that listen to this kind of thing. And so I fought with it for quite a while to try and figure out how to make it work. Ultimately, I got something that functioned the way I wanted. But here's the way I had to go about it. So 3CX, which I'm assuming a lot of people listening to this are familiar with, it's a PBX that you can, it's not open source, but obviously it's built off of open source tools, and it's a pretty good one. I think it's got a good user interface. What I wanted it to have was a good RESTful API so that my automation tools could reach in a very structured fashion and make this adjustment. And lo and behold, there is no API. Somebody, I think Pedro was pointing out a couple of different guys that make supplemental tools, and one of them said it had a RESTful API that integrated with 3CX, but it didn't actually have any public-facing documentation that said what features were available for you to make changes to. So I reached out to the company just to see. Not that I'm going to buy anything from them. I'm just curious. So 3CX was a no-go. So I ended up finding The next thing I chased around was like, well, on these 3CX phones, if you pick up and I put my support line on D&D, do not disturb, I can put a message, right? So in D&D mode, play this call handler or like forward it to this call handler. So I was like, all right, that's what I'm going to do. So I figured out if you pick up your phone, I think you dial star 32, it'll put that line in D&D, and star 30 ticks it off. So I was like, all right, is there a CLI SIP client? And I found one, and I fought with it and fought with it, and I couldn't get it to work with 3CX. So I said, screw it. And I pivoted it again. And so I was like, the Yealink phone that I have sitting on my desk, is there a way for it to log in and do something there? And lo and behold, Yealinks have RESTful APIs. Right? Of all of these things that I wish had it, it's the phone itself that actually has the RESTful API. And it's really easy to nail down buttons on this thing. Like you can, it's kind of like, theoretically, I think the vast majority of people are using the Yealink phone's RESTful API because you can hit that basically with a URL, like with a curl command or something like that, and say, hey, pick up speakerphone and dial this phone number, right? So you could have automated tools that would fire off to your phone, like one click, hey, make my phone dial a thing, which I think is pretty cool. But one of the options in there is D&D on, D&D off. So I got that working after a little while. It wasn't too bad. It was like success. So then I went to my automation tools. So I'm running Ansible, duh. Of course, that's what I'm always going to be using. And I have a CentOS 8 install. And I fired it from the CentOS 8 install, and it immediately started chunking errors. And I was like, Jesus, it just worked. You know, and I was just using a curl command, you know, nothing fancy. Well, it turns out CentOS 8 deprecated the old encryptions that these phones are still utilizing, even though it's got like the newest firmware in here. I had to dig for another hour to find out how to disable that functionality on CentOS 8 so that I could get legacy support. I got that. And then finally, I was able to get the automation going to where a site goes down, it automatically goes to my Yealink phone, throws it on D&D, and then moves on to the troubleshooting portion for me. So it took a minute, and I don't have it to where it takes it off, because I thought just because the ping comes back up doesn't necessarily mean everything's working out there. So I'll verify it first, but then I can take my desk phone off D&D, and it actually is working really consistently. So I don't know how you've ever used your 3CX or Yealink phones, but I thought that was a really cool way, because it just, I don't know, man, it was like so different than I had really been thinking about. Just like having the automated tools reach out and troubleshoot for you, I was thinking that is so crazy to think that it can actually help me with my call volume too at the same time, because that is immediately what happens, right? All of your phones are lighting up, and you're constantly answering the phones while you're trying to fix the problem. I guess the only thing worse than that is when somebody's standing over your shoulder while you're trying to fix the problem. So it kind of, I don't know, it was just such like a departure from my normal way of thinking that I love that example of being able to do it. So I really had to fight my way through it for like 2 days off and on, like not 2 days solid, but off and on to get that portion working.
Sure. Yeah. And I know that 3CX has APIs. I just don't know what they do.
It's usually related to CRMs. Like being able to reach out to Salesforce or to your, you know, this tool or that tool that's got like client information in it, stuff like that, as opposed to letting you actually configure meaningful things in the PBX.
Okay. Coming from the 3CX side, they also have something called Call Flow Designer.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that much about it because it's, A, I haven't had a need, and B, I've been really, tied up with other stuff. But you can use it to build a system that runs on the 3CX PBX. And so, from what I understand, this thing could reach out, and depending on what HTTP response it got back, it would do X or Y. And, you know, I believe you could use it to, someone calls, it checks, you know, their caller ID to, you know, your CRM to figure out, you know, are they a customer? Yes or no. Okay, yes, they are a customer. Where are they at? You know, back and forth to be like, okay, you know, this site is, you know, this customer is calling and they're down. And you could use the 3CX PBX to then redirect them and say, hey, we know that you are down.
Hmm.
Not just everybody that calls in, you know, Greg's internet, but I know that your site is down. And you could do, you know, we'll reach out, you know, we'll just fix it or whatever, blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, press one to, you know, open up a ticket with us and we'll get back to you when we get back to you. And then it could do an HTTP call to your ticketing system. And okay, you know, Bob called, you know, he's just wants you to tell him when it's fixed. And all that could be done without your involvement.
Right. The only thing is you just have to have that database of phone numbers, right?
Sure. Yeah.
For this, it's like apartment people that I'm selling it to the apartment complex as a whole. So it's free as an amenity for all those users. So I'll probably never hear from any of them. So it's virtually, I would never have anybody in my database. But what I am doing is every new apartment complex, I'm giving them a different DID so that I can pop just associated with them. Yeah. And I was thinking you could go a step further. So if you had like out of band management there, you know, that's doing some additional monitoring, that's watching like a utility or something like that. If that out of band management reports, hey, utility's down and the router's down, you know, you could say, hey, you know, a different message you could put in place that would say, hey, we see that, you know, there's power interruption at this. So you could actually get kind of granular on what you think the problem is. If you wanted to, not that it matters, you know, I assume that if their lights are off, they're not going to, oh, so there's me assuming, as I say, I'm assuming if their lights are off, they won't call you about the internet not working, but you know, they probably would. So yeah, one or the other is probably a good idea to do that. I can see people doing that. Hey, I lost Wi-Fi on my phone. What's the story here?
It's like, well, the power company says that you have no power.
Well, I see you put something on here about Yealink CAs. What's the story with that?
So there are lots of certificate authorities out there. And a lot of times you don't even know, you know, you buy it from company A, but then, you know, they may have, you know, certificate authorities, you know, 1, 2, 3, and 4 that they actually issue out of. Well, on a phone, there's only so much memory to store all these certificate authorities that they might possibly connect to, you know, or, well, on a desk phone, you know, on a cell phone or a computer, you know, you have a lot more resources. And so Yealink only supports certain ones. And you can manually add one to the phone, but then that throws out any hands-free configurations if you're trying to do, because then you have to log into every phone and upload the certificate, you know, file, and then, you know, you might as well type in the configuration while you're there. I know that'd be more work and be silly, but I had been using through Namecheap. I was getting Komodo, I think, positive SSL is like a $5 per year certificate. And if you set it up correctly, you know, in the right order, in the file that you put into 3CX, the Yealink phone would work. Well, at some point, they changed from being called Komodo to being called Sectigo or something like that. Second, something, I don't know. Which is fine, because somehow desktops and cell phones, all that stuff, already know about it, but the Yealink phone does not. So it just rejects it as, you know, I don't know who this person is, I'm not going to accept this. So then it won't pull any configurations, it won't do any of that, you know, sort of stuff. So then I switched to this other company. I think they're called Rapid SSL. And using them for a little while, they silently changed certificate authorities on me. So, like, you know, I went through and I just replaced, like, you know, I replaced one here, one there with Rapid SSL. I was like, okay, this is going to work. Let's replace all the rest. Well, in between my one and two, okay, yes, this works, they changed it. And then I bought a whole pile more that now don't work either. So I spent money and they still don't work. And so I was like, okay, well, I have to spin one up. Well, one has to get spun up this weekend. You know, what do I do? So I look and I find all of, like, it's a huge list of the ACAs that they do support. So, like, I just, Wednesday or Thursday, I just dropped it in the ticket with the people I bought the last cert from. I was like, you know, first I was like, you know, why this cert change? I want the old cert. My equipment needs the old one, not this new one. And they're like, we don't have access to that anymore. Okay, well, here's this list of 40, you know, CAs that you do, or that, you know, my equipment does support. Which one do you support that's the cheapest? And they didn't get back to me, so then I just went the other way. I said, okay, let's go through all their certs. Look at this one in the list. Look at this one in the list. Okay, I think this matches. So I bought one, and I'm waiting for my guy to, you know, put it into a new PBX and see if the phone accepts it. It's just such a pain in the butt. Oh, yeah. It's like, on the computer, you don't really think about it. You buy a cert, and it works. It just works, assuming you bought it from a you know, legit place. But no, on phones, it's, you know, desk phones, it's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
Now they support, the phone support Let's Encrypt. Yealink, or Yealink 3CX supports Let's Encrypt, except they won't do Let's Encrypt if you have your own FQDN for the server. You have to use
their
FQDN.
Interesting.
And I don't want to use theirs. I want to use mine because I'm selling the PBXs, you know, this hosted PBX service to people. I want my company name to be in the URL that you get. I mean, it's, you know, it's not that big of a deal, but it's like for the low cost of a certificate to have my name there every single time they click on a link. You know, it's worth it to me. Now, can they make Let's Encrypt work on my own domain? Yes, there's no reason why they can't. They just don't. They're, you know, they're kind of a stereotypical developer of, you know, I will offer you what I think I should be offering, and if you want something different, then beg for it, and I might do it. Like, you know, they've put themselves on a pedestal. And it's like, you know, they make it extra hard for you to get what you want.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, there's always going to be gripes with every vendor. Nobody is perfect. I was telling my kid the other day, I was like, no person is completely good. No person is completely bad, right? We're all a mixture of a little this, a little that. Let's see. Something else I had, this is more kind of, I was just curious to see what your take would be on this. So there's been a lot of chatter about people using public resolvers, and I think we've beat this horse enough to say you should, like, for your ISP, you should not be using public resolvers. You should be running your own resolvers, but that doesn't mean that you can stop your customers, your clients, from using whatever they want for their DNS resolution. Or in my opinion, I don't think you should stop them. Like, if they want to use all eights, that's, you know what? More power to you. I was just curious, do you think that we should start, you know, as like ISPs, as service providers, like at least in our business contracts that we're having people sign, some language around, you know, we don't recommend you using public resolvers like 8888-4222-1111, you know, kind of use at your own risk. These are our public resolvers, and, you know, we'll kind of warranty these things. Because it seems like I can't remember who it was. Maybe Brock. But he was saying that he had a customer that continually is having problems getting to all eights when, you know, it seems like it's not really necessarily his issue for the most part, right? Like, he's done a lot of work. Whoever this was said they did a lot of work and they narrowed it down and doesn't really seem to be their problem. So, you know, I mean, just like any other service out on the internet, it's kind of best effort, right? So should we have to put some language in your contract? I mean, would you think that was weird if you saw that in a contract from somebody?
I mean, if I were, you know, John Q Public, I'd be like, WTF. But, you know, mostly because I mostly due to lack of understanding, you know, mostly due to ignorance.
Yeah.
Me as an operator, that makes total sense. It's like, I don't have control over that. Therefore, how could you expect me to ensure that it works?
Right.
When you know, there's absolutely nothing I can do to affect its operational status.
Mm-hmm. And I think everybody in ISP land at one time or another has been bit by, like, Google's DNS throttling. Like, one form or fashion, we've all been hit by it. You know, either our own fault or not the fault of ourselves. But, you know, it's the same for your customer, right? If your customer happens to be something goes haywire and they send a bunch of responses over there, all of a sudden, hey, the internet stopped working. Well, you know, did it? Or are you having DNS issues? I was just interesting. Like, what do you think perception would be of customers? You know, but then again, even if there is language in your contract that you give to business customers saying not to use that stuff and then they have problems, you kind of don't want to be that guy that says, well, it's in your contract. You know, did you read it? Because that never makes people feel better.
No, it does not. and so I, you know, it's, I think it would be, dang it. I have a disk full on a server. I think it would be a lot like, you know, a lot of things in your contracts or in your SLAs or whatnot, they're there to protect you, not to be the stick that you beat the customer with. Right. So it's like, you know, if they get belligerent, it's like, well, I don't have to help you because you're not using that thing. But it's like, okay, well, let's look. Okay. You're not using the thing, but, you know, if they're being reasonable and they want an out, you know, they're trying to discover an outcome, be like, okay, you know, I see that you're not using our DNS server. Can we try changing that and see if that makes a difference? Okay, we changed it. Now it works. Clearly, whatever you're doing doesn't work, and good. But if you refuse to change it, be like, okay, well, I, you know, what, you know, it works for everybody else. Our internet works for everybody else. So what do you want me to do?
Mm-hmm. Such is life. Such is life.
Or it, you know, I guess on the sneaky side, you can be like, okay, well, I'm just going to redirect their DNS for now. Oh, say, okay, yeah, it works now. Well, yeah. That's because I hijack your DNS queries, send them to where they're supposed to go, and now they do work. I don't know that I recommend doing that.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's a stopgap or whatever, but yeah, for sure. Yeah. I guess it depends on your client's savviness, like how clever they are or happen to be. Oh, man. So this week, I had one of my first customer engagements. It wasn't completely me, but I got to do most of the talking. And I had built... So Cisco, they have this DevNet thing, right? So you can reserve, like, cloud-based stuff. Or they have some always-on stuff. And so I was using their ACI, which is their controller. It's kind of their SDN infrastructure. So it will auto-discover your leaf and your spine, and then your leaf switches. And then it'll automatically configure the underlay and overlay. It's pretty neat, right? So, like, the... underlay, it configures ISIS between everything and then handles the VXLAN implementation. Like, so much so that I think you're even locked out of, like, making little tweaks to the underlying infrastructure. So, I mean, it really abstracts all of that difficult stuff away from you. I don't know, so there's some listeners saying, oh, that's not difficult. But you get the idea, right? It kind of takes all that away from you. And they replace it with this GUI that is, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying there are way too many clicks to do anything. And so if you have to, like, configure 1,000 things, I mean, you basically strangle yourself with your mouse there. Hopefully it's not wireless. Otherwise, you're going to have a hard time doing that. So, I mean, it's really designed for automation. And so I was automating against their always on, and it's really easy to use. You know, just get it and go away, and it's done. Well, they asked me, hey, on this call in 2 hours, would you mind demonstrating this ACI stuff you did? And I said, yeah, no problem. So I looked, and the always on is under maintenance. I was like, oh, that's not good. I can reserve one. Not a problem, right? So it's reserved just for me, and it's got only my settings. I was like, that's cool. Spin it up, and then it turns out that you can only get access if you run the Cisco AnyConnect client. They have no way to get direct access to your infrastructure any other way. So I was like, well, I've got this automation server over here that I need to get access to, and it's running a CentOS box, and you're only giving me the tools for either a Windows machine or a Mac. So I found this in the conundrum. So I got the AnyConnect client. I connected my laptop. NetSH built into Windows 10 has this port proxy option. And so I tried a bunch of different stuff. And then I found this port proxy option. You basically say, hey, listen on this IP address on this port, forward stuff coming in from there to this IP address on this port. And I got that to work, and it connected, and then I ran my automation, and it passed, and then 7 minutes later, I was on the phone call. I was like, dude, this is way too close. I shaved that one way too close. It seems so asinine. It's like you give people these great tools, and then you cripple them by making them go through with the AnyConnect client. It seems so crazy. It's like, why not give me, like, standard VPN interfaces to this stuff? It's not like you have to, like, keep this stuff crazy encrypted or anything. It's like, because this thing's going to retire and completely go away, and that information's gone. Like, it's pretty much an ethereal environment you're giving me. So, I don't know.
Yeah, like, anytime I ever have to use that Cisco AnyConnect client, I just, like, okay, I'm getting ready for a hard time.
Yeah.
Like,
I got it going and all that stuff. What I'm really, you know what I'm having problems with, bud, is most of my connections of people that I've made over the last 10 years are, like, all ISP people. And all the stuff I'm having to automate against is, like, enterprise stuff. And so I am in, like, desperate need of people using these enterprise tools. So, like, if there's anybody listening that uses ACI, I would really like to talk to you, because I want to know what's the thing you actually really, I mean, I,
why
I did some stuff. I just don't know. It's like, is this a thing you do once, you never do it again? Right. Is this, like, a compelling story for somebody using ACI? Cause the idea being is, right, as I'm supposed to, like, show them something that makes their life easier. Why? I don't know this product. I don't know what's going to make your life easier with it. So I need to find people, and I'm trying to, like, post on LinkedIn and say, hey, anybody proficient with Cisco ACI, reach out. And I'm just like, I'm getting, you know, it's crickets. So I don't know good avenues to find people. I need to figure that out, because that would help me a lot. You know what I really want to do is just find guys in enterprise environments and say, hey, let me just talk to you, or let me shadow you for half a day and just ask you questions about stuff. And it's like, so I can figure out how people use random things and how you'd automate. I don't know how else to do it, honestly.
I just queued up a post on the Brothers social media. Are any of you proficient in Cisco ACI? We'll just see who shows up.
Yeah. I didn't think about asking on the Facebook page.
It'll go out in 30 minutes.
All right, rock and roll, man. So let's hit some bugs. So who was it? Tom Smith did an upgrade recently where he put in a Netonic switch. And he said generally his rule of thumb is whenever you get a device and you're going to deploy it, you put kind of a known, good, new, stable firmware on there. And the Netonics had 1.5.5 loaded on it, which is the new one. So he rocked and rolled. And then all of a sudden, I think it locked up on him. And it turns out the fix is to, if it comes from the factory with 1.5.5, you have to load 1.5.5 back on it manually, and that fixes it, and then it's fine.
So. I think I've had to do that a couple times for some of the older Ubiquiti firmwares, somewhere around 5.5 or 5.6. I think there was, if you loaded it once, it would work, but it was kind of buggy, and the fix was just to install it again.
Yeah, I guess it's something with the factory load is just a little sideways. So it's up and working. It's working a treat for him. So just keep in mind, if you get a brand new Nutonix on 1.5.5, be sure to just, you know, put 1.5.5 back on. Just grab it and go. Also, I don't know, I guess as a word of warning, we've been hearing people talk more and more about their 4011s locking up on them. And it seems to be no rhyme or reason. There's no consistency across anything as far as configuration goes, environment goes. Some people are RMAing units and they're great. Some are RMAing units. And I think it seems like it maybe is persistent on a couple of them. None of the fixes people have been working with so far are consistent. Like, some people are saying you can underclock it or you can do this tweak or that, but you know, it's, nobody's been able to confirm anything. No one killer solution. So I would definitely say use some caution with your 4011s. I know I have one that I keep in the trunk of my car. Nobody break into it, but I keep it just there in case that, you know, I've got something powerful to move around with. But for me, it's a, unfortunately, it's a temporary only box, so I wouldn't leave it in production just because of the unknown nature of the issue right now. So you guys watch out. But then again, I know there's some people that have, you know, 50 of them out in the environment, and they're working okay. So I don't know, man. That's weird, huh?
Yeah, it's, well, it, and also, I think I've heard that people are having similar issues. Like, well, I should say similar issues. Having lockup unreliability issues with the new CCR, was it 2204 or something like that?
Yeah, or 2004. Yeah. I think I heard one report at least.
Yeah, and so it's, you know, I saw some on Facebook, and so it's now it's kind of wondering, you know, what's going on there. You know, it's a new product, so, you know, there could be bugs that need to get worked out. And I assume they're all running it on V6. I don't, you know, I'd assume that most of them aren't doing it on version 7, but no. I guess I don't know that for a fact.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, I just don't think there's enough functionality in version 7 for people to actually be running that yet, is there?
Not, you know, there's not a significant amount, that's for sure. Well, I mean, once they added the BGP routing, I think that was one of the major holes that was left as far as a basic tool set. I don't know. I mean, I haven't tried it at all because I have enough things to do with things that are supposed to work.
Yeah, I'm gonna let all those young guys with all that extra energy work on all that stuff, figure all that stuff out for me. I did see that on their new support docs, their help.microtik.com/docs, they've got some additional information on the version 7 routing capabilities, kind of how it splits up the processes and handles it. So they've started publishing official documentation talking about it. So that's pretty cool. Not that there's a whole lot there. It's kind of like one page. So I'm sure there's more to come.
Oh, sure, yeah. But, I mean, it, you know, it's nice to see, you know, that level of information, that level of transparency. You know, this is how this works. You know, a lot of people just want to understand their products a little more without, you know, going full open source, build it yourself.
Yeah, progress is progress, man.
In that regard, you know, there's been a lot of people that, or a lot of stuff Microtik's been doing that's been more and more transparent. You know, there's a lot of stuff I've seen in the past year that, you know, Microtik of 5 years ago would never have published.
The times, they are a-changing.
released, and you know, and for the better.
Yeah, for sure. Big shout out to Giannis Megas. That fool got married the other day. I didn't even know.
He did? I saw that on Facebook, yeah.
Yeah, dude, I didn't even know that thing was going down. I assume at some point he'll hear this, so, man, congratulations. Straight from me to you. I know saying it on Facebook feels so impersonal, so I think I said congratulations anyway, but officially, there's your congratulations, bud.
It, I think I did a like, so a little less personal. I don't think I even commented, but I think he listens to these, so congratulations.
Yeah, for sure, man. Let's see. Well, Mikey, I don't have anything else on the list. Do you have anything burning a hole in your pocket you need to get? Maybe something off your chest, anything like that?
I think I complained about the things that I wanted to complain about.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think I listened to you complain about them as well. All right, man. Well, if you wanted people to get a hold of you out on the big wide world web, how would you have them do that?
Patreon.com/thebrotherswisp.
All right. What if they need to contact you about Zone, how they can help you?
Ooh. I got cornered to that one, didn't I?
Yeah, you kind of cheated up. I don't know if you noticed.
Just message the Brothers Wisp on whatever platform you have, and I will get it. Just because, I mean, you know, or you can Google my name, Mike Hammett, yeah, and Wisp or something like that. You'll find me.
Yeah, for sure. Or you can you can send an email to contact us at the Brothers Wisp, and I'll forward it over to Mikey.
Great.
Excellent. All right. If you want to get a hold of me, I'm Greg at gregsoul.com, or you can just go to gregsoul.com, where I very regularly blog now. I'm blogging, like, right now, I'm doing at least, like, 4 posts a week because I'm just doing so much stuff. So, yeah, definitely go check out my stuff. Let's see. Also, probably the best way of getting a hold of me is, like Mikey said, on Patreon. I'm really responsive to my DMs, especially you guys that are listening. Feel free to DM me. If you got a question, DM me or at me. Like, if you mention me when I'm anywhere on there, I'm really good about finding that stuff. Sometimes there'll be gaps in when I check. So I might only check like once a day sometimes if I'm really busy, you know, like halfway through the day and then towards the end of the day. But if you at me, I'm pretty much always going to see that. And I'm going to jump in there. So be as responsive as I possibly can. It's patreon.com/your brother's wish. So thank you guys. Any questions, comments, any feedback of any kind is always welcome. I see feedback as a gift. So good or bad.
Constructive feedback.
Yeah. Yeah, don't tell me how crappy my fashion sense is. Give me tips on how I can improve it. That would be more welcome, I think.
You suck.
yeah, for sure. Your ears are big and your mom dresses are funny. All right, so thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next time.
See you later.
But we're informative facts, we're not disappointing. Just give us a listen, because fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry, you're forgiven.